What's up, everybody, and welcome to the Financially Free Friday episode of the Student Loan Planner Podcast. You've got Megan, your host, and I've got Sim with me today, and we are going to chat about why refinancing might become a bigger player in student loan repayment coming up. Welcome, Sim.
Hey, everybody. What'd it do?
So things are still pretty, it's quiet right now in the student loan system about the SAVE situation. This is going to go live, I think, on the 17th. So if something comes out in the next week between now and then, maybe we'll pull this episode.
We are on it.
Yeah, but we'll be on it on the next one. We think the SAVE plan is going to be toast. Travis has been doing a good job of just keeping folks updated on that with his normal podcast episodes on Tuesdays and the newsletter that we send out every Thursday with updates. If you're not on the newsletter, make sure to get on it. Go to studentloanplanner.com and sign up. We send out an update every Thursday on what the heck is going on in the student loan world and what you should know, what you should pay attention to, and what you can ignore. I think we're coming to a point where we think SAVE is going to get repealed. That seems to be the movement that things are going into. The pay plan was opened back up. Pay is a plan that folks can apply for if they did not have loans older than October 2007. That's one of the eligibility requirements. But they took away pay when, I guess it was like, what was it?
End of June with SAVE coming out. And then it came back for like a hot minute, like what, September, for like a little bit. And then they took it away. I think it was something like that. And now it's back as of December.
Yeah, it's back as of December 16th. So you can now enroll and pay again if it makes sense. And for some people, it will make sense because SAVE, if that's going to be toast, pay could be the next best option. It's a slightly different payment calculation, but it's close to what the SAVE calculation was. But we've got folks that are not going to be eligible for pay because they have loans older than October 1st, 2007.
Or they might not have a partial financial hardship either.
Correct. Yes. Or we may not have a partial financial hardship to be able to qualify for the pay plan. Regardless, we may have a section of folks that SAVE goes away, if it does, and we have to switch to a different plan. Pay is not going to be an option. And then there's IBR, income-based repayment, which if we have loans older than October 1st, 2007, that payment calculation is going to be based on 15% of discretionary income. One little caveat, IBR is kind of a two-part plan. There's eligibility requirements for new IBR and old IBR. Old IBR is if you have loans outstanding or you did have loans outstanding prior to October 2007. New IBR is if you borrowed after July 1st, 2014. So that's kind of a different date. New IBR is almost the exact same thing as pay, just has a different name. But the benefit to new IBR is it's a little safer because it was written into law. So for folks who are eligible for new IBR and pay, you know, they'd be eligible for both. I'm telling them to go ahead and just apply for new IBR because we're not going to have to deal with any drama.
Hopefully. It would take like how many people, Meg? Is it 60 members of Congress to overturn it?
Yep. Which would be a big effort and for what? To make a lot of people really upset. So IBR is pretty darn safe. If we're eligible for both pay and new IBR, I'm saying just go new IBR to avoid any headache. Because pay, while they're bringing it back, it was still brought about by the same statute as the SAVE plan was, the ICR statute. And Travis has talked about this at length in prior episodes, so make sure to go back and listen to those if this is new information to you. But the pay-as-you-earn plan is less safe. It wasn't brought about by legislation, so it has some risk. And if pay is not an option for folks, then we've got the old IBR if we're not eligible for new IBR. So that's just kind of recapping where we're at, what's going on right now. This kind of leads us to where for a long time, since it's been 5 years almost, Sim, since COVID, since March 2020. Can you believe that?
I had babies. I got gray hair, all the works.
Yeah, me too. I've got the grays. But 5 years ago, before COVID hit, refinancing, so privatizing your loans, interest rates were pretty decent. They were at 4-ish percent around then, 4 or 5%. So pretty low. COVID happened and interest rates tanked again.
For so many people, it was like no brainer. Like, you're not going to see these rates again, probably.
Yeah, for those that like, we're going to pay these loans off. Like, we're not PSLF eligible. The balance is really small in comparison to your income. So like those folks, you know, went ahead and went and refinanced, and they got rates like 2, 2.5, 3%, 3.5%. Super low, kind of like mortgages back then. But inevitably, rates went back up. Rates were not hot for refinancing for a bit, probably from like 2023 to more recently, they were up over like 7%, 7, 8, 9%. Obviously not attractive, especially during the COVID forbearance where interest was at 0% for those who still had federal loans. So we had situations where we were telling folks like, hey, if you're going to be refinancing, but you didn't already, and your rate is, you know, 6% for the federal loans, but we've got 0% interest until this 0% is lifted with COVID, like you might as well just sit with the federal loans for now until rates come back down. And so a lot of people did do that. Now we're starting to see rates come back down to a sweeter point.
Yeah, the feds have done a couple of rate cuts, some speculation if they'll do more. So potentially rates could even keep dropping.
Yeah. And I had a client yesterday, actually, so this is super time relevant, get approved for a refinance through one of the companies we have on our website that we track regularly. They got 4.9%, I think it was, but then with a lot of the discounts, like the auto pay discount and some other discount, they were able to get it down to 4.4%. And that's the lowest I've seen lately with some of my clients personally. But she was a case that we were definitely going to be looking at refinancing. We were just kind of waiting for rates to come down. Also, like kind of waiting for clarity on what the heck was going on in the student loan system.
And that was a fixed rate, right, Megan?
Yes, fixed rate. And so we made the decision to go ahead and lock that in. But we are getting to that point, guys, where like we haven't talked about refinancing in a while because it just wasn't a good option for a lot of people for a number of reasons, either because we had 0% interest. That was a big reason. And interest rates were a lot higher. But now that interest rates are going back down, and this client of mine, they weren't on save. They were on the pay plan. So they had interest accruing and their rate was about 6 or 6.5%. For them, it was a no-brainer to go ahead and do the refinance. Now, let's talk about those that might be on save, though. What would you say to someone who might be a case of let's go and refinance? Would you tell them to go now? Or what do you think with the save situation?
I think it's always a question of interest rates and what's the alternative. So if you're not on save, does it make sense for you to go on one of the other plans if you're eligible? Or is your payment going to be so high anyway that it might make more sense just to go ahead and pay off the loan? So everything's kind of an analysis. It's case by case. Like, what is your income like now? What is your income trajectory? So maybe your income is low for like a year or two, and it would be great to stay on an income-driven plan just for like some cash flow relief. But you know that you're probably going to end up refinancing anyway. So you kind of set some cash aside for that interest accrual, or you stay on the safe forbearance, right? And enjoy that no interest accrual period, knowing that you're going to end up paying off the loans.
Yeah. So there's definitely factors that go into like timing here, of course, specific to your situation. So let's go through a couple scenarios. Let's say you're someone who is on save. We're in the save forbearance, so we have the 0% interest currently. And let's say you were planning on refinancing anyways. Save was just the plan you were on to save some interest in the meantime before you made that decision. And let's say that risk tolerance wise, you are okay with waiting, you know, waiting for save to get figured out, and you want to take advantage of the 0% interest environment. That's a great decision. You know, that's a great decision for you, because what you can do is sit in the save forbearance, have the 0% interest applied to your loan right now. Rates are going down. There is a risk that they could change. They could go back up in the future. But the plan could be to go ahead and refinance when save is going to be tossed out, or if they start to make you have to update your income, like that could be a trigger to go ahead and look at refinancing. But in the meantime, what you could do is be practicing payments. You know, what would that private student loan payment look like? And go ahead and make those payments towards the loans. You have 0% interest, so your money's going to go a little further between now and when you actually go to refinance. And the benefit to doing that too, we're saving money on interest, but we're also reducing the balance. So when we go to refinance, we're refinancing less of a balance, which might also make your interest rate better.
You know what else you could do? Take those payments, stick them in a high yield savings account, and then right before you go to refinance, make a lump sum payment. But that way you're getting a little bit of interest on your money. I think it's, you can get rates around 4% right now.
That's a good idea. So people that should be maybe considering refinancing, that's kind of a no-brainer, are those that their balances are significantly lower than their income and they're not doing PSLF. And let's say they don't have significant payment history towards the 20 or 25 year forgiveness threshold. You know, you guys mathematically are probably going to want to go ahead and refinance because you're going to be paying the loans off. And you just want to do that at the least expensive way possible. And lowering the interest rate could be a way to do that. Let's say, let's take a different example. Let's say you're someone who is pay eligible. And you can actually do some calculations on our website, the studentloanplanner.com website. You can go to our online calculators and plug in your numbers. But let's say you're someone who's got an income of about $150,000. Your balance isn't lower than your income. Maybe it's a little higher. Maybe your balance is like $180,000. So income of $150,000, balance of $180,000. Let's say your interest rate isn't horrible, but it's 6% with the federal loans. And let's say you started repayment in 2017. That gives us 8 years of repayment. So decent payment history towards the 20-year timeline if we're doing pay. And then decent balance, but good income. So what does that look like? Well, if I run the numbers on that, the pay payment is going to be over $1,000. It's going to be closer to $1,100. Where the save payment could have been closer to $1,000. So there's about $100-ish difference between the two payments there. We've got 13 years left towards pay. So in this example, pay might make a lot of sense because pay between now and forgiveness time, interestingly with these numbers, I swear I didn't like plan this, but we'd pay about $180,000 towards the loans in this example. If we made $150,000 and our income grew by like, you know, 3% year over year, typical cost of living adjustments. But what's interesting is we still get a big chunk of the balance forgiven. So about $113,000 gets wiped out. As we know, like forgiveness is potentially taxable to us if we're doing a longer term forgiveness plan. So let's just be conservative and say we're in a higher tax bracket federally. We have a state tax payment as well for the forgiven balance. So that $113,000 that gets forgiven, let's pretend we have to pay $45,000 on that in the future. That's called the tax bomb. We have to set aside some savings for that between now and then. If I add the total payments plus the taxes, that shakes out to about $226,000 for our total cost. That's on the pay plan. I like to also look at, you know, how does this compare to refinancing? Because we do get to forgiveness, right? There's a significant balance forgiven, but our balance is just barely over our income. You know, our balance isn't double our income. And I'd just like to see how it compares, because what if pay goes away, right? What if we have to get thrown off of pay because they take it out? It's collateral damage with the save plan. If we compare that to refinancing, like taking your balance and just going and refinancing, maybe we get that 4.5% interest rate for refinancing, but maybe we squish the payment terms. Instead of 13 years, we're going to pay it off in 10 years. Let's just get it done a little faster.
Nice round numbers.
Yeah. Payment will be a little higher. So instead of like 1100, it's closer to 1800. So we'll talk about budget here in a second. So closer to 1800. But what's interesting is the total cost is almost the same as what pay's forgiveness looks like.
Actually less.
Yeah, pay's total cost is $226,000, including the tax implication. Refinancing at a 4.5% interest rate with a 10-year term in this example is $223,000 for our total cost. So just under that number. This is where, like, I could argue both ways in this conversation with a client where, you know, if they're wanting to know like, okay, well, should I trust pay? Should I commit to pay? Is it going to yield forgiveness? The answer is yeah, it does yield forgiveness. Can we trust it? Hopefully, you know, hopefully it's going to be around. It does yield loan forgiveness and the total cost is about $226,000, which is lower than other options like going on IBR, for example, income-based repayment.
Megan, do we think that if they do get rid of pay as well, that they would grandfather people in like they did before?
Yeah, possibly. I feel like that's what would prevent things from getting burned down. Right?
Right, like mass protest.
Right, because it's you're not alone. Like, you're not the only one who's on pay if you're listening to this. Thousands of people, hundreds of thousands of people are on these income-driven plans. So if they make changes, forcing you into a corner, I mean, like, it could be really bad. So all that to say, I like to bring this case up in particular because this is a case I can argue both ways. So if this client, let's say, Sim, you're the client and you're telling me, I like the payment flexibility of pay. I like that the payment's lower. I'm okay with saving for the taxes. You know, if I add in how much we've got to save for the taxes, maybe that's another couple hundred dollars that we have to prepare.
Because that's a good point. What if they get rid of the tax bomb? What if enough people advocate? Then actually, you'll be really glad you didn't refinance because then it's almost $43,000 cheaper to stick with pay.
Yeah, so it's a little cheaper if the tax implication is gone. That's a big if. We don't know if that's going to happen.
No one knows.
Yep.
The thing, though, to consider with this is that refinancing is one and done. Like, when you do it, it's not reversible and it doesn't have the same federal protections that federal student loans do. Like, if you, God forbid, need a forbearance, there's different types of deferment, cancer deferment, et cetera. There's total and permanent disability. These things exist. You don't really have any of that with the private loan.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Yeah. So this is a situation where I'm gauging risk tolerance talking to somebody. I'm gauging how they're feeling about the student loan environment and also taking into account other things in their financial picture. Because I've definitely had situations where this is a case where pay and refinancing look almost the same. And I have someone say, well, I don't even want to deal with the madness of the student loan system anymore. I want something certain. And that's a fair argument. That's really fair because, like, it is, you know, we know it's exhausting, like, keeping up with some of these updates and, like, the what ifs and the, you know, could this change tomorrow situations. And so someone might say, like, I don't mind stepping away from some of the flexibility because it's keeping me up at night with all the changes that are going on. I'd rather certainty in my life. I'd rather just get this done and out of the way. And that is fair. That's totally fair. You know, the awareness is important. Like, if we're going to refinance, then we may have less flexibility with forbearances. We don't have access to income-driven plans. If we ever end up working in public service, like, we can't go and work, you know, do PSLF, for example. But maybe that's okay if we've got a really good emergency savings, we feel very secure in our job position, you know, we can get a lower interest rate than what we have right now, and we feel comfortable with that payment and our budget overall. So that could be a situation where this is pretty split, where I could argue, again, both ways, but we're leaning towards refinancing because for that person, it makes sense. Where alternatively, all the opposites could be true. Like, someone might say, like, I value having more money in my budget. I'd like my payment to be lower. I want to see if there's anything new that comes out in the future to take advantage of. That's okay too. And they're okay with maybe the variability of, like, is that tax implication going to exist or not? And so in that situation, what I would typically advise is let's plan on going the pay as you earn path, the income-driven path. And then let's maybe take the difference of what the refinancing payment would look like and what the income-driven payment would look like. Take the difference of that, set that aside into savings, or maybe invest that if we've got a longer time horizon. And then if things change, if job situation changes, income changes, and we want to end up going and being more aggressive, then we can, kind of like you said earlier, Sim, like, take that money from that high-yield savings account, dump it on the balance, and be done with it.
Yeah, exactly. And then the other thing too is if you're preparing for the tax bomb, we don't know if it's going to go away, but if it does, then that's great. All that money you've been setting aside for that purpose is just yours to do whatever with now. So it's still a win-win.
Mm-hmm.
Because the other thing is, not only, like, do we not know what's going to happen with the tax bomb, we don't know what's going to happen with the tax rates, the tax brackets. Those can change with any administration too.
Yeah. And the tax bomb is, like, not student loan legislation. It's tax code. It's totally separate. So things can happen with the tax code that do, like, affect you with the student loan situation, but it's not the same thing. We have to kind of have a game plan to be able to pivot, and then things could get better. I don't think things could get worse than what we're modeling here, but we're modeling things super conservatively when we're talking through these scenarios. But this might be a situation like, so coming up with the pay plan, if we have access to pay, you know, maybe the numbers are showing us about the same thing one way or the other. And then it's just a decision on you for your risk tolerance, your preferences, and what direction you want to go. And then we could build in some safeguards. Like, let's say we do prefer to go and refinance, but we do want to build in some flexibility. We can do that. How do we do that typically with refinancing?
Yeah. So for refinancing, if you're not sure ultimately what you'd like to do, then you can choose a longer term. The downside of that is that the longer the term you choose over which to refinance, the higher your rate's going to be. But it gives you some flexibility in your cash flow. And then you can always go ahead and refinance later if it makes sense to do so. Like if it's going to lower your rate, usually that'll help too, because by the time you go to do another refinance, you've probably put a decent chunk towards the loan. So your balance is lower. You might be able to choose a lower term. So maybe you started off with like a 20-year term and you've been paying for 5 years. You put a nice chunk towards the loans. Now you can go ahead and refinance. Maybe you'll choose a 15-year term or even a 10-year if it makes sense for your cash flow. And that's because the lender's taking a risk on you, right? So 20 years, you can potentially default over that time. There's more of a chance you'll default over a 20-year period than like a 10-year period.
Yeah. And you can refinance as many times as it makes sense as well. So a lot of these companies have cash back bonuses too. That's like another little aside, but you can refinance with a different company if you can get a lower interest rate. There's no prepayment penalties and there's no like application fees associated with refinancing, at least from any of the lenders that we track on our website.
I do warn people, look out for prepayment penalties. I don't think any of the lenders that we have on our website have those, but if you go outside of that, just read the fine print. Always read everything before you sign it.
Yep. But typically that's the case where there's no prepayment penalty. But yeah, you can refinance as many times as it makes sense. And if you're using those options that we have on our website, you can continue to collect those cashback bonuses as they apply over time to have like a little boost in your extra payment to start off the payment journey.
I always tell folks too, if you're going to go down the refinance route, make sure you're saving at least 1% off of your current rate. Make sure it's fixed. A lot of people get tempted by those variable rates. We saw this happen during COVID. Rates were super low, especially the variable ones, but rates went up and a lot of people got screwed. They start off maybe with like a, you know, 2.5, 3, and they're sitting somewhere pretty around 7% now in some cases, or even more.
Yeah. And just as a reminder, like if you're PSLF eligible, do not consider refinancing right now. If you're planning on leaving your PSLF eligible job for good and you don't have the 120 payments yet, maybe that's a different story. But if we're banking on PSLF, if it does make sense to do longer term forgiveness by a landslide, like our balance is a lot greater than your income, we are pay eligible or we're eligible for IBR. Like we can still do loan forgiveness on IBR, even if you have older loans, it would be a 25-year timeline, which is the same thing as save, by the way. So if you were on save, like it's not changing the timeline. It's just changing what the student loan payment's going to be. So maybe the payment is higher, but the forgiveness path still makes a lot more sense than paying the loans off. I just felt like this episode would be important because refinancing has been not part of the conversation for a long time. And it may become more part of the conversation for folks who were already kind of straddling the line between should I go forgiveness or should I do refinancing. It might become more relevant. And then also for folks who may not be eligible for IBR that maybe were eligible for save. But even for those folks, like for those that were eligible for save but are not going to be eligible for pay or IBR because their income is now higher. And even folks that they're not eligible for IBR, they were on save. I'm running numbers and I'm seeing that a lot of times the folks that were on save pursuing loan forgiveness that now may have to switch to IBR or they're not eligible for IBR, I'm seeing that the save path, like, yeah, we may have gotten towards loan forgiveness, but it was also comparable to paying the loans off instead. And like one last comment I'll make that something we'll definitely cover on later on too, but there is this House GOP plan that's intriguing to us. It's a proposal that could come about in the next couple months on like a different repayment plan. It's a hybrid between an income-driven plan because your payment calculation is based on actually what the pay calculation would be or the repay calculation would be, 10% of your discretionary income. But it's a payoff plan in the sense of like it doesn't have a forgiveness threshold. You pay off what the total principal and interest would have been if you were paying the loans off in 10 years. So it's kind of an interesting hybrid plan where the math may make sense to do the House GOP plan, but we're still at the same interest rate. So maybe refinancing still makes more sense. So this just goes to show, like, I feel like I'm saying a lot right now, but this does go to show that, like, your plan can be very specific to you and your income, your goals, your risk tolerance. And so it does warrant, like, a customized plan, I would say, or a customized thought of, like, what you specifically should be doing. So don't mirror what your best friend is doing or what your colleague is doing, because it may not be the best game plan for you.
And the last thing I'll say too is that I have a couple of folks who are going for refinance and they were denied or they weren't able to do so without a cosigner. That is likely because of credit history or lack thereof, outstanding debt. So if you do need a cosigner, you can look for something called a cosigner release. After you get to a certain balance, they can let you just take over the loan and get rid of the cosigner. And if it's because of your credit history, I would say, you know, try again in a year. Take that year, really build up your credit, pay off some debts, just establish some history, and then you might be able to, you know, get something better in a year. So don't give up.
And we have a whole episode on credit a couple weeks back. So take a look back at the list of our podcast episodes and go listen to that. That can help you with your credit score, improving that for the refinance. But thanks for hanging out with us today. This was a little bit of a more like focus on student loans, but also like financially speaking, like some of the decisions and the things that go into a customized student loan plan, which is also part of your financial plan. So thanks for bearing with us through some of the technical conversation here. Don't be scared if your plan may change, because the plan may be better than you thought. It may be a decent option in comparison to what you thought you were already going to be doing. We're here for you. Let us know if we can help. We do one-on-one consultations, follow our newsletter, our YouTube channel, continue to listen to these podcast episodes. We will keep you posted on what's going on and informed so you feel like you've got the information you need for your financial plan. Have a great weekend. And thanks, Sim, for joining me.
Absolutely. Love to be here.
What if you could get fiduciary financial planning specific to your profession that's student loan aware that could change your life? For a price much better than you ever dreamed possible. If that sounds good to you, go to slpwealth.com/pod for a free, no obligation 15-minute intro call with one of our own fiduciary financial planners to see if we could be a good fit for you. This podcast is for informational, educational, and entertainment purposes only and should not be considered individualized investment advice. If a specific investment is mentioned, do not consider it a recommendation to buy or sell the investment. Seek first advice from a financial professional before implementing any strategies discussed. All investments involve risk, and past performance does not guarantee future results. Yay, compliance.